Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. As many of our listeners are aware, the Cajon Valley Union School District has been under fire for repeatedly defying the California Public Records Act, threatening journalists, and attempting to interfere with our reporters' efforts to cover public meetings, where members of the public have criticized the board over issues such as schools failing state standards and board president Tamara Otero failing to disclose that her son owned a company awarded a lucrative construction contract. The district denies wrongdoing, but now prominent attorney Corey Briggs has agreed to represent East County Magazine, threatening legal action against the board unless it complies with the law. Hear why some school board members could be subject to criminal penalties if they attempt to suppress our news-gathering efforts or the public's right to record public meetings in the future. We'll also have news about opposite stances taken by San Diego supervisors and city council members on a bill aimed at making police officers more accountable for some shootings. El Cajon has a newly appointed city councilman. Find out who it is on today's show. Victims of abuse by priests in our area may soon be able to get compensation from the Catholic Church, and we'll have more information a little later on. The teenager who opened fire in a Poway synagogue has pled not guilty. Hear about some newly divulged evidence filed in a federal hate crimes trial against him on today's show. We will also have results of Prescription Take Back Day and a health warning for travelers heading overseas. A D-Day veteran honored by President Trump at the State of the Union address has made an endorsement in the 50th congressional district race, and here's a hint, it's not Congressman Duncan Hunter, a combat veteran indicted on federal corruption charges. SDG&E is asking the Supreme Court to weigh in on whether it can charge you for wildfires that state regulators found were caused by the company's equipment. CalFresh is expanding eligibility requirements in June. Find out if you could qualify later on today. We will also have some tips for you as part of Stroke Awareness Month. And then on Destination East County, hear about some big events coming up, including major festivals, concerts, food and wine tasting events, and much more. Fire season is fast approaching, and we'll have some tips to get prepared from the county fire chief. We'll also have a warning about a Social Security scam and how not to get fooled. Then, on Sounds of History, we'll take you back to a lemon packing plant in Lemon Grove and on the road to the old Campo Stone store. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Prominent attorney Corey Briggs has sent a letter to the Cajon Valley Union School District in response to threats it made against East County Magazine reporters and others seeking to record public meetings. Briggs' letter states, despite lawfully occupying open seats in the front row, reporters have been threatened with arrest, removal, or both if they did not move to the back of the room. His letter warns the board that such conduct is flatly illegal. On May 7th, Ryan Love, the safety and security officer for the district, ordered our contributing editor Paul Cruz and our editor Miriam Raftery, that's me, to move to the back of the room. We explained that audio recordings would not turn out there due to noise from an air conditioner and the audience. We refused to comply with this illegal request. On May 14th, Love again demanded that Cruz move from the front row to the back, and Cruz again refused. Cruz says he was then told that an El Cajon police officer would be called to arrest him, although no police officer showed up. Our media outlet began recording meetings and posting audio files on our news site, eastcountymagazine.org, after the school district repeatedly violated California's open government laws by destroying its recordings of meetings and refusing to comply with multiple public records requests for tapes of several meetings. Our initial request was made to obtain audio of public comments by a parent who criticized the board about schools failing state standards. We wanted to quote his exact words, but we couldn't, since the district destroyed the audio of that and several subsequent meetings. State law allows destruction after 30 days, but not if a public records request has been made before then, and many boards voluntarily keep their tapes up for weeks, months, or even years, even posting them on their website, which this board has refused to do. Despite passing a board policy to retain recordings for a year and make copies available to the public on request, after we complained, new requests for recent meeting tapes have still not been fulfilled. The district's lawyer, Dan Shinoff, now claims our new requests went to a spam folder, but weeks later we still have not received any audio files. Concerned that the board could eject our reporters or bar them from future meetings merely for standing up for our legally protected rights, we contacted Briggs about the apparent violations of the Ralph M. Brown Act, California's open government law, and First Amendment freedom of the press infringement. A member of the public videotaping the May 7th meeting for the Santee Community Connection was intimidated by Love's demand and did comply, moving to the back of the room. His video was live-streamed on Facebook, where viewers asked that the audio be increased and that he move forward because they had trouble hearing the audio and seeing the video, proving our point. California law states that anyone attending an open public meeting of a local agency has the right to record audio, video, or still photos unless the legislative body makes a reasonable finding that it obstructs a view or disrupts the proceedings. Photos show that our small recording device, the size of a cell phone, with many feet to move around it, was not disruptive or obstructive in any way. Moreover, blocking the press or public from recording meetings or disseminating information is not only illegal, it's also a crime. Government Code Section 54959 states, each member of a legislative body who attends a meeting of that legislative body where action is taken in violation of any provision of the chapter and where the member intends to deprive the public of information and to which the member knows or has reason to know the public is entitled under this chapter is guilty of a misdemeanor. Briggs' letter to the district states pointedly, based on your agency's history of deleting audio recordings of board meetings, it has become necessary for reporters to record the meetings because your agency cannot be trusted to carry out this basic governance function. Now that all board members are on notice of the fact that the public must perform this function, any member's participation in a meeting at which the public has been thwarted in its efforts to make a recording will subject the member to criminal prosecution. His letter demands that the district provide unconditional commitment to cease and desist its violations, adding, my client reserves its right to file suit and seek all available relief in the absence of a timely, unconditional commitment without further notice to your agency. The letter was emailed to Cajon Valley Union School District Superintendent David Miyashiro and to Jill Barto, clerk of the board and a board member. Barto has confirmed receipt. Briggs has a history of successful litigation in public interest and government accountability cases. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego County Supervisors and the San Diego City Council have taken polar opposite positions on Assembly Bill 392, authored by San Diego Assemblymember Shirley Weber. The bill would limit police officers' use of force. The measure would hold an officer liable for homicide if an investigation finds that the officer acted with criminal negligence or if use of deadly force became necessary due to the officer's own conduct. Supervisors voted 3-2 to oppose the bill. Supervisors Diane Jacob, Jim Desmond, and Kristen Gaspar voted to oppose Weber's bill and instead back an alternative measure. Supervisor Jacob says the bill would put too heavy a burden on law enforcement officers. Supervisors Nathan Fletcher and Greg Cox dissented. Fletcher, a former Marine, said he supports law enforcement but said political leaders must have honest talks about the role that race plays, adding, supporting law enforcement means we have to put the best policies in place. By contrast, the San Diego City Council voted 6-2 to support Weber's bill after 120 speakers urged them to do so, Times of San Diego reports. City Council members Scott Sherman and Mark Kersey voted against the resolution, while City Councilman Chris Kate was absent. Weber's bill is opposed by the Deputy Sheriff's Association and San Diego Police Chief David Nisliet. Chief Nisliet blamed social media for spreading what he calls controversial images and inaccurate statements, while some critical events are unfolding. But backers of the bill note that 172 people were killed by police officers in California in 2017, and half of those who were killed did not have a gun. In San Diego County, no police officer has been prosecuted for a fatal shooting in years, even when videotapes brought officers' conduct into question. Flora Rivera, whose younger brother, Raul Rivera, was killed by an SDPD officer last year, told the board, community trust is undermined when lethal force is used unnecessarily. She told the board her brother was mentally ill and needed compassion. Clovis Honore, president of the NAACP San Diego branch, told supervisors, "In a democracy, we need to weigh the voices of the underprivileged," adding, "The next time a cop guns down someone here, that blood may be on your hands." Weber's bill was approved by the Assembly Public Safety Committee last month, and the full Assembly is expected to vote soon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
El Cajon has a new city councilman. In a unanimous vote Tuesday, the El Cajon City Council approved Planning Commissioner and businessman Phil Ortiz to fill the seat formerly held by Ben Colasha, who resigned. Ortiz edged out 21 other applicants, including three other finalists, for the position. He is the owner and CEO of New Earth Energy Strategies, Inc., and a pastor at Foothills Church. He's also an active community volunteer who serves on the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors and is founding member of the El Cajon Community Cleanup Group. According to his application with the city, his top priorities are public safety, homelessness, having a balanced budget, and economic revitalization. Ortiz will serve on the council until the term expires in 2020. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Victims who were sexually abused as children by priests in California may soon be eligible for compensation by the Roman Catholic Church, but only if they agree not to sue. Anyone who previously settled a lawsuit will also be excluded, but those barred from suing due to statutes of limitations can apply for compensation. Victims will be eligible regardless of their immigration status. The San Diego Diocese, along with the diocese in Los Angeles, Fresno, Orange, San Bernardino, and Sacramento counties, have announced that they are creating a victims' compensation fund. The program will only cover abuse alleged against priests in those five regions, not other diocese employees. Bishop Robert McElroy from the San Diego Diocese issued a statement which reads, "No amount of money can make up for the evil done to victims of priestly sex abuse, but we can and must finish the job of compensating victim survivors for the wrong that was done to them whenever it took place." The six dioceses expect their program to be up by summer and administered independently by a Washington, D.C. law firm headed up by Ken Feinberg. KPBS purports that the program would also have an oversight board including former California Governor Gray Davis and Maria Contreras Sweet, a former administrator at the U.S. Small Business Administration. But a support group for clergy abuse victims is asking for a voice in compensation programs being set up by California Catholic officials. Leaders of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, are writing to Feinberg's firm requesting the opportunity to meet regarding church design and run compensation programs. SNAP's letter states, "Let us share our experiences to help create a program that will benefit survivors instead of hurt them." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Danita Jinks.
The 19-year-old man accused of the deadly shooting in the Shabbat of Poway Synagogue on Passover and of setting fire to an Escondido mosque has entered a not guilty plea to 109 federal hate crime charges. John T. Ernest is accused of killing Laurie Gilbert Kay and injuring three other people, including Rabbi Israel Goldstein, Almog Peretz, and his 8-year-old niece. Ernest is also accused of acting out of hatred toward the Jewish and Muslim communities. Ernest reportedly posted a manifesto online before the shooting, announcing his intent in a post filled with hate speech, as well as praise for a shooter who murdered people at mosques in New Zealand. He also claimed credit for the arson fire at the Islamic Center of Escondido. After fleeing the synagogue following the shooting, Ernest called 911. According to police, he told the dispatcher that he just shot up a synagogue and believed he killed people, adding that he did so because, quote, "the Jewish people are destroying the white race," unquote. Times of San Diego reports that surveillance video from the mosque shows a suspect arriving in the same make of vehicle that Ernest was captured in after the synagogue shooting. Prosecutors have indicated they may seek the death penalty against Ernest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisher.
To help combat the opioid epidemic and prevent expired or unused prescription drugs from falling into the wrong hands, National Prescription Drug Takeback Day has been held each year since 2010. In the past 9 years, over 5,900 tons of drugs have been collected. The totals are in from this year's event held on April 27th. Across San Diego County, residents turned in 8,411 pounds of unwanted or expired medications at 42 drop-off sites. Additionally, local law enforcement agencies provided the Drug Enforcement Agency with another 8,965 pounds of prescription drugs collected at year-round drop boxes. Special Agent Karen Flowers thanks those who participated, adding, "By removing unwanted prescription drugs from their homes, these residents may have saved someone from becoming addicted to a prescription medication." Across the nation, nearly 469 tons of potentially dangerous unwanted drugs were collected and destroyed after the April event. This year, the DEA set new records for the numbers of law enforcement partners, with over 5,000 local, state, tribal, and federal agencies participating. If you have unwanted or expired medications you would like to turn in but were unable to attend the event, you can still bring them to any sheriff's station or substation in San Diego County during normal business hours. If you or someone you know has a substance use disorder, you can call the county's Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240 to learn about treatment options. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is John Fisteer with a health alert. The San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency is urging travelers heading outside of the U.S. to get the measles vaccine. A lot of media attention has been focused on the outbreak and cases being reported in Los Angeles and Orange counties. But Dr. Eric McDonald, medical director of HHSA's Epidemiology and Immunization Branch, says that locally there may be a higher risk of measles coming into San Diego from a traveler to a country with a measles outbreak. San Diego hasn't had a measles case since 2017, and health officials hope to keep it that way. McDonald says the majority of recent cases in Southern California are being diagnosed in under-vaccinated people who were exposed to measles overseas, returned with the virus, and then spread it to close contacts who are not immune. If you've traveled overseas and are now experiencing measles symptoms, such as a high fever or rash, call your doctor before seeking medical attention to avoid exposing others. If you're planning overseas travel, be sure you're up to date with your immunizations, Dr. McDonald advises. That includes 2 doses of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Measles is a highly contagious virus that spreads through the air by coughing or sneezing. Measles virus can live for up to 2 hours in the airspace where the infected person coughed or sneezed. Measles is so contagious that if one person has it, up to 90% of the people close to that person who are not immune will also become infected. Symptoms of measles include a high fever over 101 degrees, runny nose, red watery eyes, cough, and a rash that starts on the face and spreads to the rest of the body. 2 doses of MMR vaccine are about 97% effective at preventing measles. 1 dose is about 93% effective. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns that people born in the United States between 1957 and 1963 may need to get a booster vaccine because an earlier version of the vaccine was less effective and people may have had only 1 vaccination. You can call your doctor to get a measles vaccine, which may be covered by your insurance. You may also be vaccinated at a pharmacy or at a clinic offering no or low-cost vaccinations. If you don't have insurance, you can call 211 or visit www.sdiz.org to find a nearby clinic.
Joseph Riley, a D-Day veteran who parachuted behind enemy lines in Britain and fought other battles to help liberate Eastern Europe during World War II, has made his first political endorsement at age 97. Riley, whose courageous actions were honored by President Donald Trump at the State of the Union address, has endorsed Amar Campanajar, the Democrat running against indicted Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter in the 50th Congressional District, which is home to many military members and veterans. Hunter has been a strong supporter of Trump on the campaign trail and during Trump's presidency. But Riley, a former Army private, said in a statement that he is proud to support Campanajar because Hunter has, quote, now crossed the line twice, first when he betrayed the public in order to enrich himself, and now again when he makes such shameful and false attacks in order to hold on to his power. Hunter, a combat veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, is awaiting trial on federal corruption charges. He and his wife are accused of taking over $250,000 from his campaign and spending it on lavish personal expenditures, including family vacations to Italy and Hawaii, jewelry, oral surgery bills, tuition at his children's private school, and airfare for his son's pet rabbit. During his campaign, Hunter attacked Campanajar with campaign ads so filled with falsehoods that the Washington Post ranked them 5 Pinocchios. Hunter claimed that Campanajar is a Muslim terrorist trying to infiltrate the United States, even though Campanajar is a Christian raised by his Catholic Mexican-American mother. Hunter cited a grandfather allegedly tied to the Munich Olympics attack, but that grandfather died 16 years before Campanajar was born, and Campanajar has publicly denounced all forms of terrorism. He's even been endorsed by multiple Jewish rabbis for his moderate stances on Israeli-Palestinian issues. Riley states, attacking anyone for the color of their skin or their religion wasn't okay 75 years ago, and it's not okay now. Campanajar posted on Facebook that he is speechless and honored by the endorsement. Newsweek reports that Campanajar met with Riley, a San Diego resident, in the past, and that Riley has pledged to campaign for Campanajar at Veterans of Foreign Wars chapters. Campanajar has said that when he met Riley, I promised him I would work as hard as humanly possible to honor all that he fought for, our nation's values, our institutions, and the ability of every American to live with dignity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Immigrants' rights groups are speaking out against President Donald Trump's new immigration proposal unveiled Thursday, saying it betrays American values and ignores the thorniest issues that have thus far held up a comprehensive immigration deal in Congress. If the new proposal becomes law, migrants would have to take a civics test and demonstrate proficiency in English. They'd be judged on a point system that favors those who are younger, better educated, or highly skilled, or who have a job offer waiting for them. Karina Martinez with the group Mi Familia Vota in Los Angeles says that doesn't sound much like a country founded to be welcoming to people of all economic backgrounds.
While it's okay to have skills-based immigration programs, our immigration should not be limited to only a select few, an elite, especially when you add a language test. It just goes against our national values.
The president defends his policy, saying it will protect jobs by keeping more low-wage workers out. According to the American Immigration Council, more than 25% of California residents are foreign-born, and 20% are native-born with at least one immigrant parent. The state is also home to 2.4 million undocumented immigrants who are a big part of the labor force and contribute to the economy through spending and taxes. Martinez notes that the proposal makes no mention of a path to citizenship for the 200,000 DACA recipients living in California.
They want to be able to use what they've learned and harness the skills that they have. So it's a real tragedy when President Trump is doing more to hurt people than to help people.
Critics of the proposal also point out that it doesn't address the fate of the 450,000 holders of temporary protected status or the 11 million undocumented people currently living in the United States. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
San Diego Gas and Electric, or SDG&E, is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to declare it unconstitutional for states to make utilities have strict liability for wildfire damages without allowing companies to recover costs by charging ratepayers. SDG&E has failed in its previous efforts to persuade state regulators or California courts to allow the company to obtain reimbursement for its $379 million in uninsured losses from the 2007 wildfires. CAL FIRE and the California Public Utilities Commission, or PUC, found SDG&E's poorly maintained equipment to be responsible for starting the 2007 Witch, Guajito, and Rice fires, which killed 2 people, injured 40 firefighters, and burned down 1,300 homes. SDG&E has denied responsibility. The company, in its brief filed with the nation's highest court, argues that the state's Public Utilities Commission turned down SDG&E's request to charge ratepayers for its losses based on, quote, erroneous findings of fault. As a result, SDG&E is forced to be the insurer of last resort for wildfire damages, even when the damages occurred due to circumstances beyond our control, the company argues. But Loretta Lynch, a former PUC president now representing Protect Our Communities Foundation, a consumer group involved in the case, accuses SDG&E of attempting a Hail Mary pass to deny its negligence for causing San Diego wildfires, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Lynch voices confidence that the Supreme Court will deny the appeal, leaving the California Supreme Court decision to stand. Pacific Gas and Electric Company and Southern California Edison are also named as parties in the proceeding. If the Supreme Court does intervene, a ruling could have potentially huge impacts on those companies, which are accused or suspected of causing massive wildfires that caused more than $1 billion in damages. PG&E recently declared bankruptcy after the 2018 Camp Fire, which killed 86 people and destroyed the town of Paradise, California. Former San Diego City Attorney Michael Aguirre represents SDG&E ratepayer Ruth Henricks in the litigation. He criticized SDG&E for spending ratepayers' money on what he calls a frivolous constitutional case because their damage was caused by their own negligence. It wasn't based on strict liability. The Supreme Court will announce later this year whether or not it will hear the case, which could extend protections for utility companies while leaving ratepayers burned. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Starting in June, the CalFresh program will allow many seniors and people with disabilities receiving SSI-SSP, that stands for Supplemental Security Income State Supplementary Payment, to participate in CalFresh and have access to nutritious food. CalFresh is designed to reduce food insecurity and increase food budgets, improving participants' access to fresh and healthy foods. May is CalFresh Awareness Month, and during this month, the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency, community partners, and food advocates throughout the county are working together to increase awareness about CalFresh and highlight these important changes for SSI-SSP recipients. The California Department of Social Services says most SSI recipients and couples living on their own will be newly eligible for CalFresh. Most of these recipients will need to apply for CalFresh, either on the phone, online, or in person. Receiving CalFresh will not reduce or eliminate anybody's SSI-SSP benefits, according to the California Department of Social Services. Several community events are scheduled around the county where people can get free screenings and application assistance for CalFresh. You can apply for CalFresh online at getcalfresh.org and mybenefitscalwin.org. Again, getcalfresh.org or mybenefitscalwin.org or by calling 211. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Fistier with a health report. On average, a stroke occurs every 40 seconds in the United States. Do you know what to do if someone is having a stroke? If you don't, you'll have an opportunity to learn during a stroke awareness event at Petco Park when the Padres take on the Pirates on May 19th. Information about the warning signs of stroke and what to do if a person is having a stroke will be provided to those in attendance on that date, when the Padres will team up with local hospitals and the Stroke Consortium to promote stroke prevention, awareness, and recovery as part of National Stroke Awareness Month. More than 1,000 stroke deaths occurred in San Diego County in 2018. Dr. Christy Koenig, Medical Director for Emergency Medical Service at the County's Health and Human Services Agency, says, "Recognizing the common signs of stroke and what to do is extremely important. It can make the difference between life and death. If you or someone near you is showing signs of stroke, it is extremely important that you call 911 immediately, since medications to prevent permanent paralysis must be administered immediately to be effective. These are the signs of a possible stroke: impaired balance, as when a person is unsteady on their feet; impaired eyesight, such as blurred vision; numbness or drooping on one side of the face, such as an uneven smile, difficulty walking, weakness or numbness on one or more arms or legs, slurred speech, and difficulty speaking. These are three actions that will help you from having a stroke. Exercise regularly, eat healthy foods, and don't smoke. Dr. Koenig concludes, if you heed this advice for three things, you are greatly diminishing your risk of having a stroke.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
The merry month of May continues with activities including this weekend's San Diego River Days, the Manzanita High Mountain Rendezvous, A Taste of Julian, America on Main Street Festival in El Cajon, the San Diego Wine Festival, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a Gunsmoke fundraiser for a local Lions Club in El Cajon.
Plus, we have a preview of coming attractions and all summer-long events including El Cajon's dinner and a concert, Classic Cruise Nights Centennial Season in downtown El Cajon, a hike across the Santa Isabel Preserve, a Mount Laguna Living History event, the Julian Fiddle and Pickin Contest, a Memorial Day Weekend Warrior Hike Challenge to the top of the El Cajon Mountain, and the opening of the Musica in La Plaza series in Escondido.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
San Diego River Days is back for its 16th year with a full calendar of interactive activities, including hikes, bike rides, volunteer projects, bird walks, animal tracking adventures, open houses, tours, artists painting, a star party, fishing, a full moon hike, and much more. The events continue this weekend, May 18th and 19th, including fun and family-friendly activities in East County. From Julian to Ocean Beach and everywhere in between, this is your opportunity to get outside and celebrate the San Diego River. Learn more at sdriverdays.org.
You're invited to step back in time and visit an authentic mountain man rendezvous at the Manzanita High Mountain Rendezvous, which continues May 17th and 18th. The event will be held at the Northcote Ranch near Lake Morena. In the Old West, back in the early 1800s, mountain men convened each year at a rendezvous to trade wares. At the Manzanita High Mountain Rendezvous, visitors will see history come alive with demonstrations of primitive skills, period camps, and colorful characters. You can watch or participate in tomahawk and knife throwing, archery, black powder shooting, and more. Traders will be selling their goods, storytellers will spin yarns, and you'll find fun for the whole family. Find details and directions at manzanitarendezvous.com.
A Taste of Julian is a self-guided culinary tour of unique restaurants, wineries, and breweries. This year's Taste of Julian will be held on Saturday, May 18th from 1 to 5 p.m. From delicious main dishes to candied apples, apple pies, chocolates, wine, beer, and hard cider, you'll find plenty to tempt your taste buds. For tickets and details, visit atasteofjulian.com.
El Cajon invites you to the city's 6th annual America on Main Street on May 18th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The event fosters respect of diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. This year's theme is Out of the World, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the 1969 moon landing. Other highlights include a tribute to Armed Forces Day, a naturalization ceremony for new American citizens, a scavenger hunt, over 150 booths including foods from around the world, face painting, balloon artists, a space and science area, first responder safety zone, carnival nights, and live entertainment including over 30 bands, community groups, and street performers. To learn more, Visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
Over 25 San Diego County wineries, including national and international award winners, will participate in the 2019 Wine Festival. Hosted by the San Diego County Vintners Association, this year's event will be at Sykes Adobe, a historic farmstead in Escondido, on Saturday, May 18th from 1 to 4 p.m. The festival also includes live music, a silent auction, and more. Food is available for purchase. Proceeds will benefit educational programs and marketing for the San Diego County Vintners Association. For tickets, visit the San Diego Vintners Association website at sandiegowineries.org.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal rescue facility in Alpine, invites you to get wild and support their nonprofit at Wild in the Country on May 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. Enjoy al fresco dining and live music in the company of the sanctuary's animals. You can also bid in live and silent auctions. You can find tickets and details at lionstigersandbears.org.
The Elkhorn Valley hosts Lions and the Winchester Widows will present their annual fundraiser, Gunsmoke, on Saturday, May 18th at Elkhorn Elks Lodge from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. The event includes live Western and bluegrass music, a silent auction, gambling chips, and food, all to support the Lions Community Services for the underprivileged and a program that provides eyeglasses to people in need. For more information, you can visit the Winchester Widows Facebook page.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before attending the concert. For a list of upcoming performers, you can go to downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon Classics Cruise Night is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. May 22nd is Military Appreciation Day and May 29th is Convertible Night. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Julian's annual fiddle and pickin' competition will be held on May 25th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Julian's historic town hall. Hosted by the California Old-Time Fiddlers Association, the competition draws nationally known talent and is open to all ages in fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and guitar. Details for this family-friendly event are available at sandiegofiddler.org.
The Laguna Mountain Volunteer Association invites you to the 32nd Annual Living History Program over Memorial Day weekend, Saturday and Sunday, May 25th and 26th. Learn about the history of Mount Laguna residents and take free tours offered at 9:30, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. both days. Meet the red-tailed roost on Sunrise Highway near mile marker 22.5 across from the Laguna Fire Station atop Mount Laguna, the highest peak in San Diego's East County.
You're invited to hike all the way across the Santa Isabel County Preserve on Saturday, May 25th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is a moderate 8-mile hike with park staff. Be prepared for some hills. The preserve will be green with wildflowers galore. Park at the 79 gate to catch a shuttle to the farmer staging area. For more information, call the park at 760-765-4098.
Chamber Brewera has performed in Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, the Sydney Opera House, venues in Austria, Australia, England, Ireland, and Iceland. They sang the Mass in St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican in Rome. Now the globally acclaimed young singers, middle and high school seniors from the San Diego region, are bringing their a cappella choral magic to the table. United Church of Christ of La Mesa on May 26 at 2 p.m. For details, visit tableucc.com.
A Memorial Day Weekend Warrior Hike Challenge will be held in El Capitan County Preserve with a hike to the top of El Cajon Mountain, also known as El Cap. The trail is arguably the toughest in San Diego County, so three levels are offered. The Warrior level is an extreme hike of 12 miles. Recon level is about 6 miles, and a boot camp level features a 2-mile round-trip hike. The San Diego River Park Foundation will lead hikers on an expanded tour to the summit and county staff will be on hand to answer questions. Refreshments will be served. Visit the San Diego County Parks and Recreation website or Facebook page to learn more.
Musica in La Plaza is a free community series that will take place from 7 to 10 p.m., the last Friday of each month starting May 31st. The series will bring live music, dancing, tacos, and tequila to the California Center for the Arts. For a list of entertainers scheduled, visit artscenter.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
It's Wildfire Preparedness Week. CAL FIRE and County Fire Authority are advising property owners not to let the rainy weather fool you. Fire season will be here before you know it, and the time to prepare is now. In a month or two, it will be hot and dry, and all those grasses and wildflowers will die off, creating fuel for fires. You should have a plan and be prepared now to protect yourself, your home, and your community, firefighting experts advise. If you clear away dry brush and other combustibles from 100 feet around your home, the chance of your structure surviving a wildland fire is greatly increased, says County Fire Chief Tony Meacham. That clearance allows firefighters to defend your home. Have a plan. The time to figure out what photos and medication to take is not at 2 a.m. Third, be sure your address is posted clearly so firefighters can find your residence if you call 911. You can get more tips at ReadySanDiego.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. In the dimly lit confines of the fruit-packing plants that once dotted East County, men and women, but mainly women, worked as sorters and packers of lemons and oranges bound for rail shipment to points across America. Today, we bring you a little memoir of life in a fruit-packing plant during the Great Depression, written by Estelle Tooker of Tennessee. Her discussion of making ends meet with a little daughter to raise and an ailing war veteran husband to care for will resonate with many modern people. Here are her words, written in 1979 when she was 78 years old. My husband, Earl Tooker, and I, with our 2-year-old daughter Ione, arrived in San Diego by train from Sioux City, Iowa, in January 1923. We had $50 and very little else. We stayed in a hotel, eating our meals out, and it soon became obvious our $50 was not going to last. But it was our good fortune when a realtor told us we could rent a little place in Lemon Grove for $15. We had no idea where Lemon Grove was, but the important thing was that we would have a place to live and still have a few dollars left until Earl's pension check would arrive. He was a disabled World War I veteran, gassed in France by the Germans, and we had come to California because of his poor health. So there we were in our little place, located on the west side of Old Imperial Avenue, running through Lemon Grove. There was 3 rooms, furnished with a kerosene-burning stove with, for cooking, a table, a chair or two, and a bed. There were some chickens, good laying hens, and the remains of what had been a little vegetable garden. So we had plenty of eggs, and we had carrots and peas, and that was it. When the rainy season began in January, our tar paper roof developed many holes. Before the season ended, we were expert in keeping dry with every available pot and pan to catch the water. But it was so cold, we resorted to wrapping ourselves in throw rugs to keep warm. By February, our $50 was long gone, and the expected pension check from the government did not arrive. We knew no one in Lemon Grove except Tony Sonka, who ran the general store, so we took the gold wristwatch my parents had given me on my 18th birthday and gave it to Mr. Sonka as security for groceries until our money came. He was so kind and generous to us. Then we were offered a chance to move and live rent-free in another house in Lemon Grove, and in return, we took care of the house, the chickens, the garden, the berry bushes, and the nanny goats who supplied us with a lot of milk. My husband, Earl, was a telegraph operator by trade, and when his health permitted, he worked as relief man for all the different stations on the San Diego and Arizona Railway line, which ran from San Diego to Yuma, Arizona. In 1927, he got the permanent job as depot agent at the railroad depot located across the street from Sonka's store in Lemon Grove, and that's when I went to work at the packing house, packing lemons. My husband's duties at the depot consisted of receiving and delivering telegrams, sealing and routing the loaded cars of lemons being shipped out of the grove, and handling freight and supplies to the growers all over town. He worked there till 1931, when his health failed completely. My work at the packing house consisted of two departments where women did most of the work. We took turns. When the lemons were first brought in from the orchards, they were green, hard as rock. They were dumped into a huge tank, filled with some kind of solution, washed with big brushes. That was a two-man job, back and forth and back and forth. And then they came out on a conveyor belt in all sizes. Two women to a box, picked them off the belt, grading by size and quality. They were then taken to the basement and stored until time to pack for shipping. And that season began in May. A lemon packer was paid higher than a washer, but it was piecework. You had to pack 10,000 lemons a day in order to earn $3. On a good day, we would earn $4 or $5. Minimum wage was 33 1/3 cents an hour. That was the Great Depression. But still, it was fascinating to watch those women work, all standing beside the moving belt, lemons tumbling along so fast, all arms reaching out to pick a lemon, and as if with one movement, a methodical swish, a simple twist of the hand into a square piece of labeled sun-kissed paper and into the box. Then with lightning speed, a packer would swing the box around, fill the other half, place a card on top, swing it to another belt going in the opposite direction, and start another box. The packed one was then lidded in an operation performed by the pressman. We never knew when one of our boxes would be inspected. If it passed inspection, we got paid for an extra box. We had to repack the entire box if it did not pass inspection. The lemon sizes were based on the number of lemons it took to fill a packed box. Some of those sizes were 300, 360, 520, and so on. As many as 200 freight cars of lemons a season were shipped from Lemon Grove. The season was May through September, but washing those lemons was more or less all year round. I'll always remember our close friends and neighbors from that time. We made a little bit of money and they all came by to see our very first washing machine. Y'all might know that Big Lemon. My husband was part of building it in 1928. We never dreamed it would become a permanent historical landmark, but it's still there. In 1934, my husband was sent up to the Veterans Hospital in San Fernando, and for a year, we tried to keep him alive and keep him in a good climate. But he finally died. He passed away on October 25, 1937. My daughter and I returned to our old house, the one we very first moved into in Lemon Grove. And my daughter graduated from Grossmont High School in 1938. And at that time, we left Lemon Grove forever. But I will never forget it, because that little town kept us alive all through the Depression. And there you have it, dear listeners, for the Sound of History. I'm Helen Ofield.
The Federal Trade Commission is warning the public about a surge in phone calls from scammers posing as Social Security agents. The imposters try to con people into providing their Social Security numbers or other personal or financial data. There are several variations on the scam. Sometimes callers claim that a recipient's Social Security account has been suspended, requiring immediate action to reinstate it, including paying a fee. Other times, the caller warns that a bank account is at risk and offers to keep it safe if you provide your banking information. Other times, the scammers will tell seniors that you are entitled to an increase in your Social Security benefits if you will just verify your name, date of birth, and Social Security number, information that the scammers can then use to redirect your benefit checks to themselves, according to the AARP. Here's what one actual scam phone call sounds like, courtesy of the FTC. There is also an email version of this scam, in which consumers are asked to click a link to register, ironically, for a free service to protect you from Social Security fraud. The link is actually a phony government website designed to steal your personal information, Consumer Reports warns. Don't fall for these scams, and if you have any questions about your Social Security account or benefits, look up your Social Security office to obtain their contact information and then give them a call to avoid becoming a victim of identity theft. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built a fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people, and so they were shooting dead blank range around, and both Gaskell Brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them, so they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well a skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and an African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.